You are listening to a podcast from WSUM. Catch You Seem Exceptional live on Tuesdays at 4 p.m. on 91.7 FM Madison. Hello, Madison, and welcome to You Seem Exceptional, an interview show that you are currently listening to on WSUM 91.7 FM Madison. Each week on this show, we will have a guest on to get to know them and their story. I'm your host, Oliver Gerhars. This is my co-host,
Jeb Blossom.
And today our guest is
Tamara McLean.
All right, so there's a little way that we like to start our show. Every single week we ask, where are you from?
Stevens Point, Wisconsin.
And how did you end up in Madison from there?
It was a long journey by way of Green Bay, Wisconsin, and then eventually I ended up in Madison.
What brought you to Green Bay?
Work. So I graduated from the University of Wisconsin, Stevens Point, with a graphic design degree, and then worked in advertising and print in Green Bay.
For how long?
A long time.
And then what ended up bringing you back to Madison?
I wanted to pursue my Master of Fine Arts degree.
So why did you decide to return to the higher education sphere after decades away from it?
I was teaching at the University of Wisconsin-Green Bay as a lecturer, and I wanted to be able to apply for a professor position. So Madison was the best option as far as pursuing the Master of Fine Arts, which is the terminal degree.
And so how did you find yourself a lecturer at Green Bay?
I worked as a professional for 30 years and really wanted to give back to the students and teach them what I had learned and what the industry was like. So I was asked to teach one class at UWGB, and then that became two, and before I finished, it was three. I decided it was time to get the MFA so that I could become a professor.
So how long were you lecturing there for?
Since 2018 until 2022 when I started this program.
Huh. Wow. So did you ever, was that like eight straight semesters of lecturing or?
Yeah, give or take. And then during COVID-19, it was all online.
What do you tend to focus on as an artist?
I like to dabble. I'm probably a generalist officially. I'm an interdisciplinary artist, but I also like to do environmental graphic design as well as augmented reality and motion design.
So what is environmental graphic design?
So if you go into a branded space, it would be like the custom wallpaper in the restaurant, or I recently worked with the Freedom House in Green Bay and designed all of their graphics inside the shelter.
So sort of the very artistic part of interior design.
Yeah, the branding graphics that appear on the walls. I also do donor walls for fundraising events, you know, like after they have donated the money, then they usually post the names on some sort of plaque. I create, you know, designs around stuff like that, restaurants, retail.
Do you have anything in particular that you've done in that environmental graphic design department that you really sticks out to you?
Yeah, one of my favorite projects was for KI in 2011. I did their large showroom at Neocon in the Merchandise Mart in Chicago, and it won Best Large Showroom. It was a fantastic opportunity. We created projection mapping, which is projecting graphics onto objects. And so the chairs in the front display room all had graphics that were being projected onto them.
Oh. So the thought of you become the art piece when you sit down came into my head.
Right. Basically, that's what happened.
Was it like from above?
So there were three display windows that were projection mapped, and then there was also one inside of the showroom as well.
So you also said that another area that you're pretty big in is AR. Could you explain AR?
Yeah, augmented reality is when you layer digital assets on top of the real world. So Pokemon Go is a great example of that, where you can see the real background and then you have a graphic animating on top.
So when did you first find out about AR?
I started exploring AR a little bit as far as process and trying to figure out how to create AR when I was at Minneapolis College of Art and Design. And that was in 2020 I started that program, and then I took it further as I came to Madison.
So what specifically there brought that to your attention?
I thought it would be interesting to create murals that had an animated feature over the top. I just thought it was more engaging. And oftentimes we produce murals as a community asset and a way to bring a community together, but then they're kind of stagnant. They don't really have any impact beyond, you know, walking past them. So I thought it would be fun to create something that was more engaging.
So what changes, if any, have you seen since, like, in AR since you've started working with it?
I think it's become a lot more mainstream. And the tools have made it a lot more accessible for artists like myself. I like to work with Adobe Creative Suite products. And in that, there's Adobe Aero, which then is a very easy way and intuitive way to create AR without having to write a lot of code.
So does it usually take like a lot of, I guess, without that technology, it would be mostly a coding thing?
Yes.
Did you ever have to do it that way?
I have experienced a little bit of Apple Reality Pro, which is a little bit more code-based, and it's definitely not for the amateur.
Apple Reality Pro, is that, what is that?
So Apple Reality Pro is an interface that Apple is using to help promote the generation of content for Apple Vision Pro. So it walks a developer through the process of creating that augmented reality asset that then can be used in the Vision Pro. And that's the headset.
Yeah. So how do you feel about that headset as sort of a, because I know that's sort of been a big thing for AR.
I'm excited to get my hands on one. I have not had the opportunity yet. I think it's a game changer. When you think about graphic design and the fact that for years we've had to be tethered to a computer and sitting, even the standing desks are a small improvement, but not really a huge improvement. I would like to see a world where we could design using augmented reality, where we could use our whole bodies, we could stand up, we could walk around, and not be tethered to our desk all the time.
So kind of like the jump between, I'm seeing a similarity between what you're talking about, working on graphic design at your desk and working with AR, is sort of as like a similar difference too between painting and sculpting.
A little bit, but I'm thinking more like game playing, you know, it's more like Kinects, where you're using gestures to move things and tap on things.
Have you had any shows using this AR technology?
I have not, no. I had a little bit. I did one piece in the first show when I was just starting in this program, and that was called Landed, where I had created some augmented reality objects. And then that was kind of an experiment in troubleshooting too, because I wanted to see if people could access the AR with their devices, what kind of devices they had. Some people didn't have, that one was done in Reality Pro. So if they didn't have an iPhone, then the Android didn't work. So it was a lot of testing.
Is that sort of an accessibility issue then with Apple sort of making it only visible through Apple products and Apple Vision Pro being $4,000.
Yeah, so definitely there are workarounds. For instance, there's a company called The Eighth Wall where you can use it with any phone. The caveat for me or the hang up is that that's a paid subscription that I would need to subscribe to use that. And so as a grad student, I don't have the funding to do that yet. But, you know, hopefully in the future.
So what does it look like for someone who goes to your show like Landed and they go, how do they access the AR?
There's QR codes.
Okay.
And the reason I use QR codes is because they seem to be a visual cue that this is something you can scan. I could make the object itself the trigger, but the reason I don't is because people wouldn't know that they need to scan that.
So that actually reminds me. So the other day in one of my classes, there was a student and there was a QR code up on the board. And the teacher was like, all right, could everyone scan this so we can all do this Google form? And he said, could you pull up a link? I don't trust QR codes. How do you feel about that?
That's interesting. And I agree, because these days you don't know where the QR code's going. It's a mystery for sure.
teacher supplies the QR code. That's not enough to make him trust him. Do you know much about how QR codes work?
A little bit. Are you going to test me?
I don't. So you could say whatever you want about QR codes.
Yeah, we'll
I'll
believe
have to
you.
Believe you.
So I typically create QR codes for URLs, like if I want someone to go to a website for more information. But since COVID, QR codes have become so common now that people tend to, you know, recognize that that's going to give them more information. Before COVID, people didn't really want to use QR menus or any kind of thing like that. They were actually becoming less popular before COVID.
So speaking of COVID, so you were a student at Minneapolis College of Art and Design during COVID. Do you think that that has sort of, the fact that when you were sort of getting into this newer side of things, the fact that that was during COVID, do you think that had an impact and brought you towards a more digital side of things?
Well, the program I was in was the graphic and web design program, so I would have been there anyway. I would say it didn't matter that it was all online because, quite honestly, everything I had to do was sitting at my desk.
So have you had any other sort of recent shows?
Yes. So in January, I had my MFA qualifier show. It was titled They Said, and it was based on my research, which is women graphic designers in Wisconsin. And I interviewed women graphic designers and asked them what it was like to work as a graphic designer, whether they were always thinking about graphic design or if they had other career aspirations and ended up in graphic design. And then I also asked them their opinion about artificial intelligence and if they use it in their jobs, and if so, how and what they think about it.
So there's a few things I want to talk about from that. So the show itself is one thing. There's also what you said about AI and that research. But for now, I want to put a pin in those and I want to talk about the sort of MFA process, because I have been struggling to grasp that while I've been doing research before this episode of the show.
Okay. So the Master of Fine Arts program here on the campus at UW-Madison is a three-year program. The first 2 years, students take classes and have independent studies with professors. The second year, you put on an MFA qualifier show, which then your graduate committee, which is four professors, sign off that you've done enough work to continue in the program and actually graduate and reach your goal at the end of the third year.
So how often are those shows? The qualifier, you said?
So spring qualifiers are going on right now. So if you see any promotions for any shows, it's usually either the MFA qualifier, which is the second year graduate students, or the MFA thesis shows, which are the third year students who are about to graduate.
And which was yours, you said?
Mine was the qualifier. So I'm a third year rising, I guess you'd say.
Wow. So what do you have planned for that upcoming show then?
Oh, so my show already happened in January.
So, is it like you can do the qualifier or the...
No, you do the qualifier the second year, and then the third year, in the spring of your third year, you do your MFA thesis.
All right, what I'm getting at is, what do you have planned for that MFA thesis?
Oh, I have not yet. I haven't thought about that yet. I received a lot of great feedback from my committee and a lot of questions that I then responded to. I think my research is going to be shifting based on what the professors have responded to and, you know, what the questions they've asked. And I, as a result of that, needed to do quite a bit of research as well.
So your research, so you said it was into, you sort of interviewed a lot of female graphic designers. How many was that?
For this initial amount, I interviewed 10. And then for my thesis, I'll probably interview another 10 to 20.
Wow, that's a pretty large amount of people. So you said that, I'll just focus in on the AI question because that's kind of the big one. So how did people feel about the use of AI in that graphic design community?
Graphic designers have very mixed feelings about AI. Some graphic designers are worried that AI is going to replace a lot of production work and then billable hours as a result. Other graphic designers love AI and it makes their jobs so much easier, and they can focus more on the creative aspects of their jobs instead of the menial tasks.
So what menial tasks is it sort of best suited to helping with?
I would say like one of the number one things that every graphic designer wants to get rid of is clipping masks around objects. I mean, when you want to drop out a background of a photo, it's so nice to just push a button now instead of literally drawing it around with your mouse.
So what were some of the concerns related to AI from those who were less for it?
I would say that AI in the graphic design realm can also create layouts. We've all seen Canva. Canva is a platform that you can create graphic design with basic tools and templates. So some of that type of work goes away, but I would argue that graphic designers with a degree shouldn't be doing that work anyway. That's the kind of work that everybody should be doing.
Were there any fears of obsolescence among those who are working?
Somewhat, but the people that I interviewed have an advanced skill set, so I don't think that they need to worry.
So jumping over to another project, could you tell us a little bit more about your recent collaboration with the Meadwitter School of Music?
Yeah, so they reached out, and actually the request came through the art department, and then they asked any grad students who were interested in collaborating to connect. It was a request to create visual graphics that responded to a particular piece of music. And so I took the challenge. Mallory Stowe also took the challenge. She's a painter. And we created art that then could be displayed during the live performance. So my piece in particular was motion graphics that were displayed on a projection screen over the orchestra as they performed.
So I remember you saying motion graphics earlier, but we didn't really go into it. How exactly, what's the process? I mean, what's a motion graphic?
So I am dabbling in motion graphics. I would not call myself an expert, but I'm intrigued enough to learn more. I'm currently enrolled in the history of animated film, and I am learning more about animation and hopefully trying to make the connection between past art films and animation films and modern graphic design. And so far in my research, it seems that the invention of import-export and the computer has really streamlined those work processes and combined them. So now video, animation, and graphics are all kind of combined into one process and one workflow, which is new. It hasn't happened in the past. So it's just because we can export files and import files in those different tracks.
So as a student, what kind of other classes are you taking?
I'm taking that class this semester, and then I'm also taking screen printing, and then I have completed all of my required credits.
How many credits are required of the MFA?
60.
60? Over. So I'm trying to do the math right now. So this semester was a pretty small one then.
So, yes.
Are they usually larger than this, or has it just been two classes most of the time?
I've taken a full load every semester plus summer classes.
Ah, wow. That explains it.
So next year I will be on fellowship, which means that I will work entirely on my research and developing my principal investigation work.
And so sort of jumping over to that other side of things, what's your main focus as an educator?
My main focus as an educator, I would say, is to learn more about what it is to be a graphic designer and what's important, whether that be skills or workflow or work-life balance, and then bring that into the classroom and model that through projects.
When you were lecturing at Green Bay, what sort of things were you teaching about?
So I have taught courses in basic graphic design all the way up to advanced web and UI design. So pretty big gamut of things, whether they be print or they be digital.
Is there anything in particular that you've taught that sticks out to you?
Well, you're putting me on a spot here. I really enjoyed teaching 102 last year here at the university. It was exciting to see students come in as freshmen, and this is their first experience in a college course, and see them go from knowing basic skills to pretty advanced skills by the end of the course. Some of the students even took it further and took their designs to a three-dimensional space, which was really nice to see.
So that's Art 102 I'm taking it?
Art 102.
So what is that class?
So Art 102 is the intro to two-dimensional design. Okay. So the assignments include drawing assignments initially, and then we bring them into Adobe Illustrator and start working with point, line, and plane in Illustrator and creating more graphics.
So on the topic of courses, so you've got a new undergrad course you'll be teaching this summer. Could you tell us just like the basics, the name, the stuff like that to get us started?
Okay, so the course is Art 448, and it is augmented reality for graphic designers. It is a four-week course. It is a hybrid course, so it meets in person on Tuesdays, and then Mondays, Wednesdays, and Thursdays, there's assignments. And it's primarily going to create augmented reality using the Adobe Aero app.
So what's sort of the process of pitching an undergrad course? Because that's sort of like your creation, is that?
So I have to give all the credit to Professor Ahn and Professor Takeem Lee, because they were the ones that really spearheaded this process. And Leslie Smith III, our department chair, then approved it, and then it went up the ladder and reached approval and funding from the School of Education. So I'm just a cog in the in the process.
You'll be teaching it, though, right?
Yes, but I'll be teaching it, yes.
So you said it was about 16 students before?
Yeah, the enrollment for the class is 16.
Pretty small. Is that what you're used to in terms of class size?
Yeah, class sizes in the art department in my particular classes tend to max out at 20.
Yeah, I had an art course last semester, and I can see that.
What did you take?
I took Art 100.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, I can't. I mean, have you ever seen a large art class?
There's a couple of classes in the art department that are lecture classes. And those are larger. But they tend to keep the class sizes smaller because we're working in labs.
Yeah, art's kind of hard to have that be even, like, more than small.
Right.
Just because everything's so personal in that subject. So another thing that you, one thing you sent me a link to was the Innovation to Market cohort of Fall 2023. Can you tell me a little bit more about that?
So the Innovation to Market cohort that I participated in was primarily teaching us how to use the university's resources as we try to investigate our ideas in real-world scenarios and actually starting businesses or launching ideas. And so I signed up for it because I wanted to know what my options were as an artist earning a living post-graduation. And through that, I investigated public art opportunities, also installation in galleries and corporate environments, different things like that.
Any individual work project that you did through that sticks out to you?
Not in particular. It was a lot of research.
Yeah, it does seem a little bit more of a by the books thing.
Yes.
So originally, what is it? You said you got your degree. Where was that from?
I have a Bachelor of Fine Arts from the University of Wisconsin, Stevens Point.
So how would you compare like the education environment back when you got that to how it is now?
I would say it's pretty similar, actually. It was surprisingly similar. They also are focused largely on art and have a pretty comprehensive program, so it seemed like a easy fit.
In terms of like the use of technology in the teaching environment, did you expect more than there was, or?
So, back when I was in school, we had a computer lab that had Apple computers, and I was learning Adobe Creative Suite. There were different software programs at that time than there are now, and there's obviously a lot more programs and a lot more things to learn. I think that the fact that computers have integrated the workflows so much that graphic designers now are taught a lot more skills across animation and video as well as print and digital. So working as a graphic designer, you can do anything from websites to catalogs. You know, like the range of job responsibilities is pretty wide.
I'm trying to get at sort of the difference between, did you notice anything that had changed in that time between the teaching methods used by professors, I guess?
I know where you're going with this question, and I gotta say, no. It's all pretty much the same as it was back then. There's a lot of, especially in art, there's a lot of structure to the courses. So you model how you're going to do the process. Then you're going to have one-on-one conversations with the instructors. You're going to have class critiques that everyone's going to respond to. And then, you know, you have final deliverables. I will say, like, working as a package designer for years, when I originally learned how to create package design in my undergrad, the computers were not as prevalent. And so there was a lot more hands-on building of it. But even now here at UW-Madison, we still like to have those tactile skills in the art department so that people don't lose those skills. And even though we can do everything on the computer, at some point we have to print it out, cut it out, put it together, make sure things, you know, work in the real world space as well.
I don't have much left.
All we've got is for you to tell us about your cats.
Oh, so I have two cats, Poseidon and Dion. And they're great. They are currently living with my son, Max, who is a junior here at the University of Wisconsin-Madison in the chemistry area. And I also have another son who is an undergrad here, Gavin, who is in communications.
So what is it like, I guess, I mean, we could focus on the cats, but what is it like being a student at the same time as your sons?
It's totally fine. Like, I don't run into them unless they need something or they need to reach out to me in some way. We plan dinners once in a while, but not on a regular basis. They have their own lives. We all live in separate apartments, so.
I just think it's, so yeah, I mean, I guess you don't really end up running. I mean, you can run into someone zero times with how many people there are on this campus.
Absolutely. It's more likely that I run into Gavin because he's studying film and communications and I'm in the humanities building, but Max is over in the chemistry biocore area.
And oh, yeah.
It needs to be a scheduled meeting if I'm going to meet with him.
All right. So how old are your cats?
My cats? Oh, my God. They must be at least 12 years now.
Are they both the same age?
Yeah, they're brothers. So they were they were litter mates. And when I went to get the cats, I was with my dad and I said, which one do you think I should choose? They were both adorable kittens. Poseidon is a black cat and then Dion is a calico. And my dad looked at me. He's like, why would you choose? Just take them both. So I brought them both home.
And how did you pick those names for him?
No, actually, Max and Gavin picked them. Max was a big fan of Greek mythology, and so he named Poseidon. And Gavin likes football, so Dion is named after Deion Sanders.
Yeah, I heard those two names, and I was like, I feel like the same mind didn't go into
right
both of those cats.
Well, when you have two kids, you have to bring two kittens home, so.
That's true. Did you have any pets growing up?
I did. I had cats.
How many?
One at a time, but a succession of cats.
All right. Did you, what is it? Were you always the cat namer then?
I typically was until the boys named him.
Did you have any siblings then?
I did. Yes, I have one brother.
Wow. So you got cat naming privilege over him.
Yeah, he was always more of a fan of dogs.
You ever get any dogs?
Not as a family, but he has had several dogs.
Oh, that's nice. Yeah. He got the dog in the end.
Yes.
I remember when my family was naming our dog, we took, he was named Winston in the litter. So you're like, I really like that name, but there was something that didn't sit right about keeping it the exact same. So he switched it to Wilbur.
Nice.
Yeah, I didn't get dog naming privileges. That's how we now have Bon Bon and Clementine. Our dogs.
Those are great names.
How old are they?
I think Bon Bon's like 12 now, and Clementine is probably 7 or 8, maybe.
Who named those guys?
My sister and my mom.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, well, I don't have much else. Is there anything else that you wanted to talk about?
Oh, thank you for inviting me.
Yeah, thank you for coming.
All right, well, goodbye for now, Madison. We will be back at the same time next week.
And don't forget to say the line.
Oh, my God. Tamara, you seem exceptional. That was a close call. As a reminder, you can find all the old installments of this show at WSUM.org under the podcast tab.